You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for April 18th, 2014. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from just outside Clive Bundy's Gods and Monsters Roadshow, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal. What a week.
What a week. Very busy.
Yeah.
Moochers of the Purple Sage.
Yeah.
I like that.
Thank you. I stole it from Zane Grey. Actually, I think I stole it from Philip Jose Farmer.
Oh.
Who wrote ironically enough, he wrote a story in the 60s, I think, or early 70s. It was one of the Harlan Ellison anthologies called Writers of the Purple Wage.
Oh,
and
nice.
Purple Wage was, I believe, welfare at the time.
Ah.
So, but that reference was too obscure. So, yeah. It's
Moochers of the Purple Sage. Well, and it is interesting that Clive Bundy, who insists that he does not believe in the federal government, is simultaneously backed up by people who assert their Second Amendment rights.
Yeah, which apparently is part of some other government that they recognize.
Some other constitution somewhere, right. Some other federal constitution somewhere.
Some other amendment to the Constitution
yes,
that
yes.
they don't recognize.
And then did you notice that there were American flags behind him while he was speaking
yeah.
that he did not set fire to?
Yeah.
I wonder what would have happened if somebody said, look, I don't believe in the federal government, and just went and set fire to one of the flags.
Well, and
behind Clive Bundy.
Yeah.
How would that have turned out?
I'm asserting my free speech rights, too. And this really is, if you are not old enough to remember the dark days of the Clinton administration.
Yeah.
Black Helicopter, Ruby Ridge, Waco. You notice on Fox, they repeated Ruby Ridge and Waco over and over and over again. They never mentioned the Murrah Federal Building.
Nope, they don't mention that because that's white terrorism.
The anniversary of which is tomorrow, 19 years.
They do not mention 19 years.
Yep.
Oh
yep.
My God.
Next year will be the 20th anniversary of the most devastating terrorist attack until 9/11. And it was carried out by a right-wing, liberty, government-hating, black helicopter, paranoid lunatic, just like millions of people who were wearing tricorner hats and screaming about tyranny and the blood of tyrants.
Yep.
All across this great land of ours, who call themselves Republicans. I guarantee you, if you put up Timothy McVeigh's tirades, and you put up the average conservative right-wing blog. Or the average speech from Sean Hannity today, you would not be able to tell the difference between the two.
And I want to point out, just while we're talking about this, Dave Nywert's book, The Eliminationist.
Yes, yes. It's wonderful. It really is seminal. You really should go buy it.
You should go get it and read it if you want to find out about how the right wing went nuts and became this hate group.
Yeah.
I mean, really. His work is so important.
And it has these, you know, essential elements, the element of paranoia, the element of the feeling of terrible oppression, the element that your country is being taken away from you. And you just hear echoes of that mindset, which is ineradicable. It is just not ever going to go away because there's no amount of proof you're ever going to pile up that's going to convince some flake like Clive Bundy that he's wrong.
Well, and I found it really interesting that two bloggers that I know about, one Talking Points Memo and the other Ed Brayton over at Free Thought Blogs. Both of them are apparently being sued for calling out right-wingers for being either a hate group or a white supremacist.
Yeah.
And that somehow by saying that you are engaging in, you know, slander or libel, and we're going to use the government's court system.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, I'm not suggesting and I'm not endorsing what happened in Nevada and taking the law into your own hands and, you know, loading up guns against federal agents and so forth.
No. And
I'm just pointing out the hypocrisy.
Oh, it is hypocritical if you have a functional hypocrisy detector.
Yeah.
But
and
they don't.
If you have a functional stand on anything.
They don't. They just there's this, you know, if you go back to. books on authoritarianism from like John Dean and the stuff from the late or early 2000s where it's the authoritarians and study after study showing that, you know, 30 some odd percent of the American population is hardwired authoritarian. Mm-hmm. They want to follow a man in a uniform on a horse into something. They want it in a nice ordered structure, or they want to be the guy on the horse. They don't really care which. And when these people are out of power, they flip the fuck out. Yep. And they, so, you know, this is something going back to Jon Stewart, 10 weeks after Barack Obama was elected, when the right, and this is really important to remember, because this, what we have that they don't have is a long-term memory. Yes. We remember that they were freaking out literally the day Barack Obama was elected, the day he was elected, the day he was inaugurated. They lost their minds and started screaming about tyranny and their country's being taken away from them, and on and on and on. The same fucking bumper stickers 5 years later, the same bumper stickers they were yapping 20 years ago. They just never change. Jon Stewart said, that's not tyranny, that's losing.
Losing, yeah.
And the idea that they would lose an election when Karl Rove promised them a permanent Republican majority is intolerable. And therefore, there must be something broken about the country because they're not in charge of it. And therefore, socialism, Marxism, Barack Obama's coming for your guns, because they really don't think like a normal, functioning, sane person thinks. They reverse engineer every event in the world into their own little paranoid corner of it.
Well, and what I find fascinating is, you know, if we're just talking about a crackpot like Clive Bundy,
yeah,
who does not represent a majority of ranchers. He does not represent Nevadans. He does not represent anyone, but he gets a lot of TV time on Fox.
And let me be clear, he doesn't represent probably the majority of Republicans.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
They won't throw him out of the party.
No, no. That's my point is I was looking at Twitter today with the NRCC, the National Republican Campaign Committee, the Congressional Campaign Committee for the Republicans. Sent out a tweet today in response to a reporter's mentioning that President Obama has said on the issue of health care reform, now that it's 8 million people who have signed up, I think we can all agree it's time to move on.
No, it's not.
Well, the Republican National Campaign Committee or the Congressional Campaign Committee tweeted, no, we can't.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of people pointed out, wow, that's your campaign slogan for 2016.
Yeah. No, we can't. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and remember, these are people who
I just wanted to say that these crackpots they're not supposed to be crackpots at the campaign committees of the national parties.
No, but that's what happened. You have reaped what you have sown. You told these people for years that they were sane and they were normal and they were patriotic and their paranoia was actually heroic. And you watered them and you fed them and you pandered to them and you flattered them, and they gradually took over your damn party. Mm-hmm. And now it's like these people never read Frankenstein.
Right.
They never read The Sorcerer's Apprentice. They never read a single children's book about why you shouldn't, you know, feed a gremlin after dark, because it'll turn into something horrible. They were warned. For Christ's sakes, they were warned all along. These people are crazy. They're not a majority of your party, but they will become the majority in your party. They will take over your party. You will start taking orders from the dregs because you are empowering them. And it was always the same bland reassurances from people like David Brooks that such things don't exist. Those people aren't real. It's the David Gergen, you know, no. We're in charge. We're in charge. They're not in charge. We're in charge. And now it is patently obvious that the Clive Bundys of the Republican Party are calling the shots. And they could do that because all they have to do is sit out an election and the Republican Party would lose every fucking election in America.
Right.
And they know it. So they are willing to give people like Bundy anything he wants, including airtime on their personal political machine, the Fox News broadcast and hate radio. And they're never going to – and they're stuck between two places. They can't admit that he runs their party, and yet they can't throw him out. And he's got them. People like that have the GOP by the balls, and they can't admit it. And they just keep squeezing and squeezing and squeezing. And that's why I constantly say focusing on them is a waste of your time. It's interesting, and it's certainly educational. Focusing on the people who keep equating Clive Bundy with liberals.
Well, and keep equating Fox News with an actual network.
Yeah. Those are the people who are the real pernicious, because they're doing it on purpose for money.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the people that really deserve to be dragged out into the sunlight and pumped full of truth serum and forced to explain how they could possibly keep putting these awful people on the air over and over again, how they could keep doing that and never ask them a hard question.
Hey, Drift Class.
Yeah.
I want to do a shout out to your mom.
Oh, yeah.
Your mom came for a visit this week and we had a wonderful time.
We did.
And she has purchased for me a subscription to Mindful Magazine.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I don't recommend it for everybody. It's something that I enjoy reading.
Yeah.
But the issue came in the mail today. Thanks, Mom. We really appreciate all your generosity. But this one had a cover story with a picture of Arianna Huffington on it.
No. I know.
Didn't exactly make me mindful.
No, it made me mindful of how careful I am to avoid Arianna Huffington at all costs.
But you can meditate with her online now.
Yeah.
And her new book is called Thrive, and it's about once you've got money and power, then what do you do? It's interesting. That's exactly what David Brooks is kind of writing about, too.
That's what Steve Martin was saying 20 years ago. First, get $1 million. And you know what? There is an arc that you can follow, the place where the founding father sort of thing, where you become a successful in the world, you become a successful landowner. I'm not excluding the fact that a lot of these guys were slaveholders, but the idea that you become successful in your early years mm-hmm. and you devote your later years to public service.
Mm-hmm. And that's a great path for everybody to follow if they can. You know, support your family, make as much money, work hard.
Yeah.
In your young years.
Yep.
And then give back as you get older. And that's wonderful.
But that's not what we're talking
about. That's not what we're talking about.
At all. Because if you've worked hard making gears or building homes or putting in plumbing or doing people's
or
tasks.
Or serving pasta to people in a restaurant.
Yeah.
I mean, if you start your own business and you're actually contributing something to an economy.
Yes.
And not stepping on people and paying decent wages to your employees and, you know, being basically a hardworking American.
Uh-huh. This is the dirty little terrible liberal secret that we'll show. Liberals actually like small businesses.
Oh, absolutely.
We like a lot. We really appreciate the
shopping local, working local.
Exactly. The idea that you support.
Most of my charitable giving these days is giving locally.
Yeah.
Because I can see the Habitat for Humanity house being built.
Absolutely.
I can see the food bank. I can see my community benefiting from what I'm able to give.
And you can see the ripple effect through the economy. And you can see the same people that you are eating at their restaurant or drinking coffee or buying pants or whatever are the same people who are helping pay taxes for the schools and who help out after school and who, you know, pick their kids up. And so this pernicious idea that doesn't exist anywhere but in the imagination of Fox News and hate radio, that liberals hate business, is insane and absurd. Most liberals are business people, or they work for business people. And we would very much like to go back to that model where business wasn't the business that you support is not J.P. Morgan Chase. Now, how the hell did I get onto this train
Arianna
of thought?
Huffington.
Arianna Huffington. So you have
and David Brooks.
You have the noble business person who pursues, you know, woodworking or machine making or whatever, and then they acquire wealth and they give back to the community and they pay their employees well, and that's the way it's supposed to be. The idea that no, I'm going to make my money, David Brooks, by lying about liberals, by trashing, by supporting awful policies, by hopping on the wingnut bandwagon and riding it all the way to the last station, which is Dick Cheney.
Mm-hmm.
And after I've committed all of these terrible thoughts to paper, after I've made my bones slandering people like Driftglass and Blue Gal, calling us awful Americans, calling us dupes and fools over and over and over again, your entire career, just mocking and sneering and sniping and supporting the Iraq war and supporting tax cuts and on and on and on. And you've parlayed that into a job at the New York Times. After you've done all of that, I'm perfectly willing to let you go on and serve some greater good, some common good. But first, you have to admit and atone for your sins. You have to go through the 12 steps. You actually have to stop and turn around and say, I was wrong. But these people can't do that.
Because there's a wonderful video out that I put at Open Thread and Crooks and Liars on Thursday night this week of Second City, put out a video, which was very much like a PBS How to Paint TV show. And it was the young lady who taught George W. Bush to paint. And she really nails it.
Yeah.
And one of the things she says is, you know, painting releases you from all guilt.
Yes.
I hit an immigrant family with my Hummer and killed them all, but it's okay because I paint.
That's right. Well, and we were talking before the show, there's a movie called House of Games, a David Mamet movie that is very good, before he lost his mind. It's a fine movie. But there's this moment at the very end when
Spoiler.
When the woman she's a shrink, she's a psychologist, and has written a book, and she thinks she has killed someone. Mm-hmm. Whether she has or not, we don't know. But she really believes she kills someone. And she goes to see her mentor, this older German woman, who wants to tell her all about, you know, don't worry, my dear. And so they're having dinner at a very, very posh restaurant. And she's sort of pouring out her soul to the person who is her mentor and another shrink, saying, you know, I feel terrible. I think I've done an awful thing. I can't get it out of my mind. And her mentor turns to her and says what was very much the sentiment of the Reagan administration and the Bush administration. It was very popular back then, and it's still very popular. This notion that, well, when you've done something unforgivable, the only thing you can do is forgive yourself.
Yeah.
And then the punchline, it's not like you killed somebody. Because there is a lot of free-floating guilt out there that people carry around with them that's misplaced or displaced or just debilitating.
Speaking of Donald Rumsfeld.
And that, exactly. And that is the stuff you have to get rid of. If you have actively and knowingly, and especially for money and for advancement and prestige, participated in terrible things, done terrible things, said terrible things, promoted terrible policies for years and years and years, you goddamn well should feel guilty about it. And the thing that is truly terrifying about our Republican friends who run this country, everybody from Rumsfeld to David Brooks, is they don't appear to have a conscience. Absolutely. They don't appear capable of remorse over anything.
When I saw the picture of Arianna Huffington on vacation in Italy with Newt Gingrich and Calista.
Yep.
And Barbara Walters was there too, and they were all getting their picture taken in their tennis clothes.
Uh-huh. Well, you know.
And this was 3 or 4 years ago. This was while I was blogging. You know, it's not like it was back when she was a fundraiser for Newt Gingrich and before she became a liberal publisher people's stuff.
Because the winds shifted, and then she hired Andrew Breitbart to create her site for her.
Her website for her. Yeah. Yeah. So there is no regret, and there's a club. Yeah.
There's a club, and once you're in it, you can never be kicked out of it. You can never do any wrong, and no one will ever, none of your fellow club members will ever hold you to account. They'll never mention it. David Brooks can go on a million shows from now until the day he dies, and no one will ever, ever be rude enough to be the specter at the banquet. No one will ever be rude enough to bring up, remember back when you used to trash liberals for all the shit they were right about? What do you have to say about that now? And I mentioned before, I caught him in public during the one time that actually happened. And he just lied about it.
Yeah.
He lied and moved on.
He's a liar. Okay.
Because
need to move on. We have to move on because this is going to be a short, late podcast.
And I know that you wanted the theme of this podcast to be pretending.
I do. I want to talk about pretending and how all of us need to stop pretending. I was grateful to hear our president this week say that these governors that have turned down Medicaid expansion have done so simply out of political spite.
Yes.
And let's stop pretending that that's not what's happening.
Yes.
Now, it seems to me that the right wing and I have my own things that I pretend, and we all have to get, like, I pretend I don't need exercise, and I know I do, but I pretend I don't. I pretend I'm too busy to do it. But it seems to me that on the right, that they have found a way to make pretending stand in for telling the truth.
Yeah, all the time.
We are pretending that tax cuts create revenue.
Yes.
We are pretending.
But they don't.
We're pretending that, this Bundy character is a freedom fighter. We're pretending.
He's a moocher. He's a welfare state moocher. He's a cattle queen is what he is. A cattle welfare queen.
Welfare queen. Uh-huh. Absolutely. And I've been thinking about this because this weekend, traditionally, happy Easter to everyone who practices Christianity in that way. And very meaningful Passover to those who practice that way, and happy spring to everybody else. But traditionally, we have used Easter weekend in the blogosphere to talk about Blog Against Theocracy.
Mm-hmm.
And this year we're just not doing that. I mean, I think there just aren't enough blogs out there, small blogs, certainly, to have a kind of movement. And I didn't want to do Tweet Against Theocracy because it's too many characters.
Well, my guess is blogging is dead, but in 3 days it will rise again. That's just my guess.
You have faith.
I have faith.
But theocracy and the issues surrounding separation of church and state, as I have said many times before, really touch upon so many other issues that are important to all of us. Marriage equality, gender equality, race equality, healthcare, all of the issues that you think about somehow brush up against church and state issues. And I just wanted to take this moment to send everyone over to AU, stands for Americans United, AU.org, which is Americans United for the Separation of Church and State. And they don't only work, they are an organization in Washington, D.C. that appears before the Supreme Court quite often, defending the First Amendment to the Constitution and the separation of church and state. And it's not just about religion in public schools or some religious display on a state house lawn. They get really down into it in terms of reproductive rights, marriage rights, privacy issues, sexuality, faith-based initiatives, government subsidies of religious institutions, and just plain old fighting the religious right. Uh-huh. On a whole host of issues where there seems to be confusion that setting your, you know, as the Bible verse says, putting your candle on a candlestick instead of under a bushel means you have to pass a law to make everybody else do what you want. To make the Bible the official book of Louisiana, which happened this month, by the way.
I think it was probably George Carlin who said, you know, the Bible's like a lift in your shoes. You know, if you need it to feel taller, that's fine. But please don't go around nailing lifts to the natives' feet.
Yeah. I don't know if you heard about that. Louisiana, some state legislator in Louisiana thought it would be a great idea to make the Bible the official state book of Louisiana.
And Jesus, the official state savior. Yeah.
And some people got upset about that because the Constitution. Some people got upset about it because what about the Catholic Bible?
Yeah.
What about our Catholic tradition here in Louisiana? We have a lot of Catholics in Louisiana.
What about the Jefferson Bible?
What about the... Yeah, what about that, huh? Well, why don't we just make it the plain old King James Bible? How many Bibles are out there? Well, there's a lot of Bibles out there. Why don't we make it this Bible?
If Latin was good enough for Jesus, it's good enough for Louisiana.
The line is, if English was good enough for Jesus Christ, it's good enough for me.
That's not scriptural. So.
That's not scriptural. Yeah. Anyway, I do want to take time in this podcast to say, go to AU.org and check out what they're doing. Support them if you can. And just read up on what's going on in church-state law and relations and politics. And you'll find an issue there that means something to you. I promise.
I think AU is the periodic table representation of gold.
Yes, it is.
I see. I'm very tired. I've been up since 4 this morning.
You have. But
actually really tired. But
well, you can always remember that because Ulrich Goldfinger in the Bond movie was AU. Well,
I kept thinking, no, astronomical unit. I'm confusing it. But my brain is trying to outsmart
itself. AU stands
itself.
For lots of things.
It
I'm
does.
Sure.
And it stands for Americans United, I believe.
Americans United for the Separation of Church and State. Yes.
It stands for that too. Yes. Good as gold.
So Bible Bitch is going to read some Bible for Easter weekend.
All right. Rock my world. Rock my world, Bible Bitch.
I'm going to rock your world. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have odd feelings and mixed feelings about Paul.
Uh-huh. But now,
this message from the message.
Well, and because I know you want to underscore that Christians especially, mm-hmm. people of faith especially, need to remember the difference, as you said, between believing and pretending.
Believing and pretending, exactly.
There's
and
a big difference between
the
two.
There's a big difference between believing and pretending. And I think that's what infuriates our atheist friends so much, is that pretending that there's a big magical fairy in the sky that's going to come down and change everything for us is not the same as having faith in a power that propels us. Let me put it that way. This is how I feel about God. So there's a power that propels us toward making the world a better place.
And faith is belief in the absence of proof. It doesn't mean belief that overwhelms the big pile of evidence that's directly confronting
exactly.
you.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's pretending.
And so, we have to grow up, as as several theologians have said. This is from Romans 14, and it's a modern translation from The Message. That's the translation that I'm reading from. Welcome with open arms fellow believers who don't see things the way you do, and don't jump all over them every time they do or say something you don't agree with, even when it seems that they are strong on opinions but weak in the faith department. Remember, they have their own history to deal with. Treat them gently. For instance, a person who has been around for a while might well be convinced that he can eat anything on the table, while another with a different background might assume he should be only a vegetarian and eat accordingly. But since both are guests at Christ's table, wouldn't it be terribly rude if they fell to criticizing what the other ate or didn't eat? God, after all, invited them both to the table. Do you have any business crossing people off the guest list or interfering with God's welcome? If there are corrections to be made or manners to be learned, God can handle that without your help. Or say one person thinks that some day should be set aside as holy, and another thinks that each day is pretty much like any other.
Uh-huh.
There are good reasons either way. So each person is free to follow the convictions of conscience. What's important in all this is that if you keep a holy day, keep it for God's sake. If you eat meat, eat it to the glory of God and thank God for prime rib. If you're vegetarian, eat vegetables to the glory of God and thank God for broccoli. None of us are permitted to insist on our own way in these matters. It's God we are answerable to, all the way from life to death and everything in between, not each other. That's why Jesus lived and died and then lived again, so that he could be our master across the entire range of life and death and free us from the petty tyrannies of each other.
Ah.
This is the part I love.
Uh-huh.
So tend to your knitting.
Yeah.
You've got your hands full just taking care of your own life before God. And that's what I want to say to my Christian brothers and sisters who want this to somehow be the official book of Louisiana. Stop it.
Stop it. Just stop it. Stop doing that. Because I can think of a lot of really good books that you should read.
Wonkett suggested that perhaps they should make All the King's Men the official book of Louisiana.
They should make the official TV series True Detective.
Yeah, they should.
Uh-huh.
Well, and one of the lawmakers, Thomas Carmody, would have made a specific copy of the Bible, the state book.
Uh-huh.
And then that upset some people. And so then he named the generic King James Version. And that upset some more people because of the Catholic heritage thing. And so then they just made it simply the Holy Bible.
Is it? Is it worth looking for? I think it's idolatry.
Yeah. And Carmody insisted, this is from Wonkett, Carmody insisted, there is no way the bill could violate the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment because it's not to the exclusion of anyone else's sacred literature.
Again, shut up. Really, there's nothing else in fucking Louisiana to worry about than getting the Bible as the official book.
They are now working to uphold the blowjobs ban in Louisiana as well. That, you know, it's against the law, apparently, to engage in sodomy of various kinds. And that's now a thing that people are worried about.
Go ahead and ask 20 people what sodomy means. And you'll get 20
in Louisiana.
Yeah. Yeah. Wait a minute. That's sodomy? Yep. Yep. And by the way, now I might be mistaken. I'm not a highfalutin theologian from Harvard like some people I know. But as I recall, the reason that Sodom and Gomorrah were ultimately wiped off the face of the earth is because of the way they treated strangers.
Yeah, I think that's right.
That the way they treated the outsider, you know, that popped the hood on all of the stories of blood and horror and cruelty. And God says, go take this kingdom away and kill everybody in it. You know, that's all in there, too. So reading the Bible is a fairly astonishing experience, even if your education skipped over all the really horrible parts.
Yep.
But pop the hood on it, and you will continue to find a motif of be nice to people who are weak. Mm-hmm. Look out for people who are being stomped on. Stand up to the powerful. Stand on the side of the powerless. Fight for justice when you can. And try to be as nice to everybody else as you would like them to be to you. And that's pretty much it. And I can't remember the name of the rabbi, I believe, who was asked the meaning, tell me the meaning of the Talmud on one foot. And it was essentially, do unto others as you would have them do unto you, or don't do unto others. I think it was, might have been Mahmud, but I'm not sure. I'm sure I'm going to get that wrong. But it was essentially the golden rule, and everything else is commentary. And that's it. It's really that simple. So start applying that, not on a religious basis, but just sort of as a practical way of measuring things to how we treat each other in the public square.
Yep. Yep.
How much courtesy and comity are extended to you by people who want to who are convinced you're a traitor and a liar and hate America?
Mm-hmm.
How much flexibility are you afforded by people who insist that the Earth is 6,000 years old,
mm-hmm.
and there's no such thing as climate change? How open are they? I am open as a liberal to changing my mind. I'm open to new evidence. I'm open to being wrong. Lord knows I've been wrong many, many times. But it is exhausting to deal with people who walk around with a Bible in one hand and a flag in the other, pretending to speak for someone who told them, stop doing everything you're doing because it's mm-hmm. all wrong. Quit fucking up the environment. Quit lying about things. Quit listening to flatterers and liars and start treating people better than you are treating them now.
And I love what you said last night. We went to Maundy Thursday. I loved a couple things you said last night, but one of them, we went to Maundy Thursday and had communion. And on the way home from church, you said to me, we were talking about, well, some people are quite rabid Republicans in our church and others are not.
Yeah.
And everyone seems to be willing to give money and time and energy to American Cancer Society and the soup kitchen.
Yeah.
And that's making the world a better place. And you said church is a neutral ground.
Yep.
And as long as people really do treat it as the neutral zone, and we're both going to put our hands to the wheel for mm-hmm. the soup kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
I'm great with that. Sure. I am great with working with people who voted Republican their whole life
sure.
and they want to help the soup kitchen. Great.
By the same token,
yeah.
I will not ever again unilaterally disarm.
Right. I will not tolerate someone saying, well, you know, this is what we're supposed to do because of all those welfare cheats. We don't want welfare. We just want the soup kitchen. Mm-hmm. No, that's not, we're not tolerating talk like that. Well,
and a number one conservative whine when you point out that they are lying and that they have broken their oath and they've gone back on their word and they will not honor the principles that they laid out with such clarity under George Bush when it comes to Barack Obama.
Yeah.
And they will not honor the promises and principles they laid out under Clinton, under George W. Bush. They just keep flipping back and forth and refusing to acknowledge that they're doing it. Pointing that out to them, and 2004 is when we started to really have to point out to them using the word fuck a lot. Because they just weren't fucking listening.
No.
So we had to get really loud about the fact that the same people who said impeach Bill Clinton for having a blowjob were perfectly okay with war crimes and treason and torture. And there's something fundamentally depraved about a brain that can work that way. And the response from Republicans, because they couldn't say no, they couldn't say that's not true, was, I thought you were supposed to be tolerant.
Yeah.
Fuck you.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm tolerant, but I'm not stupid.
Or like the guy who was on, who wrote a letter to our local paper
mm-hmm.
and blew every single dog whistle.
Yeah.
To announce that black people don't deserve good schools.
Yes.
I mean, but of course he didn't use any racial terms or any, he just talked about, there are people that care about their communities. And then there are people who live in rundown communities and don't care about their communities. Mm-hmm. And everyone who read that letter was just, the commenter went, wow, what a terribly racist thing.
Every
I didn't say anything about race.
Every dog in the neighborhood had bleeding ears. Going, stop, stop, please make it stop. But it's that, you know, if I can just parse my language, if I can go right up to the line and parse my language just exactly right.
Right.
I can say the most awful things
mm-hmm.
and then sit back and be righteous about the fact that I didn't use exactly the word.
I didn't say anything about race. You're drawing the race card like liberals always do.
And then we have to circle back to Jonathan Chait, who, you know,
oh.
who wrote his, you know.
You know, if we would just stop calling each other racist, there wouldn't be so much racism.
If we would just If it would just stop pointing to the sky and look at the cloud, look at that water, it would stop raining.
Mm-hmm.
No, acknowledging something, recognizing it, and reacting to it, and protecting yourself against it, and trying to prevent it, is not the same as doing it. It is not morally equivalent in any way. Now, there are people who yell racist at the drop of a hat. And that is that sort of that cheapens the word, that cheapens the currency. Mm-hmm. But there is no argument you can make on this earth in good conscience to pretend that the people who have risen to political power blowing dog whistles like fucking bagpipes
right.
for years are in any way the same as people who point to them and say, look at what they're doing and look at how it works. Those are two radically different, completely opposite things, and comparing them and saying, well, you know, both sides is obscene and absurd. So stop it.
Stop it.
Where are we?
We're at just kind of where I want to stop.
Okay.
And it's just we're just really flat out this week, and we apologize for the brevity of this podcast. Elizabeth Warren has a book out on Monday.
Yeah.
Which means she's running for president. We all know that, right?
Sure. Sure.
And Hillary's book is coming out in June.
That's nice.
And Chelsea is pregnant, and we still don't have health insurance.
Mm-hmm.
The Sunday shows last week just decided not to mention the congressional report on torture at all.
They decided.
Peggy Noonan, I guess.
Congress decided to put that Bush torture report on the same shelf where it keeps, you know, investment in renewable energy and infrastructure, and gun background checks and climate change shit. You know, that big dusty shelf where things go to die. So the Congress said, we're just not even going to deal with this at all. And so the Sunday shows ignored it. And you might remember a long time ago, an embarrassingly addle-pated lady named Peggy Noonan, who wrote speeches in whispery voices for Ronald Reagan and George Bush, who is just the least qualified person to have a pen in her hand I can think of. Although always entertaining, you know, on her third Mai Tai, she gets hot. She starts flying very high and getting mm-hmm. very poetic and waxing very, very eloquent about magic dolphins and all kinds of other strange things. But she is as grossly negligent when it comes to the get your fucking facts straight department as George Will or David Brooks or any of them.
Yeah.
But her response when it turned out that, yeah, we're torturing people, all right, way back when the story broke, was essentially, maybe a great nation should just walk on by.
Just take up painting.
We should just ignore this. There's nothing we can do about it. It's a terrible thing. We all know it's terrible.
It's ugly. It's ugly. Let's just pretend it didn't happen.
And I would like to point out that the same people who fetishize Jimmy Carter, bashing Jimmy Carter, and talk about Saul Alinsky, are the same people who believe that talking about anything that went on during the Bush administration is completely off limits because that's the past. So there is this highly selective Orwellian memory that says I can fish all the way back to the Johnson administration for liberal perfidy. I can go all the way back to Coolidge to talk about the bad old days when the Democratic Party was hosting the Klan, when Dixiecrats were in the Democratic Party. I can go back 20, 30, 40 years, 60 years, 80 years, 100 years. I can go back to fucking Lincoln if I want to prove my bona fides as a Republican who loves America. But if you bring up George W. Bush and any of the shit that his people did that is still haunting us, it's still an unclean wound that
is. He's not president anymore.
Exactly. Shut up. That's in the past. That don't count. You know why they don't like that? You know why? You know who doesn't like talking about the past? Criminals don't like talking about the past because that's where all the fucking evidence is buried. Republicans need to either shut up about these moral conflicts that they keep flipping over back. They shut up about Barack Obama and the Affordable Care Act being the worst law that was ever passed in America. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the Patriot Act, shall we?
Yeah.
You need to stop talking
about in the past.
Benghazi being a greater crime than anyone ever committed. It's like Watergate and Iran-Contra and the Iraq War had a baby. No, it's not. So you can either shut up about that, or you can stand up and put your hand up and say, hi, I'm Jimmy. I'm a Republican. And I've been lying to myself for 30 years. And we will gladly welcome you back into the fold because you know what we'd like more than anything else? A healthy, sane conservative movement, a healthy, sane Republican Party. To keep everyone in check and everyone honest, we need to be able to be honest with each other. And the fact that you've lost your fucking mind is bad for everybody.
Yep.
So on that note.
Each week, we post to our Facebook page and website at Internet Kitty, sent in by you, the listeners. This week's internet kitty is Sniffles.
Aww.
Sniffles lives with some of our favorite podcast supporters, Dan and Lisa, in Chicago. Hi, Dan and Lisa.
Hello, Dan and Lisa.
And their family. They send us holiday cards every year with pictures of their beautiful kids. So happy Passover to Dan and Lisa and the kids and Sniffles. Sniffles was adopted from a Chicago pet event, and she was a hard placement because she has had respiratory problems since birth.
Chicago Pet Event was the name of my band in the 80s. Just weird, very weird coincidence.
Very coincidence.
Yeah, yeah.
Dan and Lisa have kids, and one of their children has allergies. And so they said, no, we're going to call her Sniffles. And Sniffles came to live in a sympathetic and nurturing home.
Aw.
Which is the most you can wish for.
Exactly.
And Sniffles is very beloved. So go to our Facebook page and website and take a look at Sniffles, the Internet Kitty of the Week. You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. If you send us an internet kitty, please put internet kitty in the subject line of your email. That helps me find them.
Mm-hmm.
Feel free to write to us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go Postal Unions! Letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. So, Driftglass, how are the internet kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the internet kitties hope that Republicans never figure out that being Granny Clinton isn't a weakness, it's a secret weapon.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-doving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2014, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Doo-doo. Well, you know, that's what the Cubs do.
What?
They hire nice old ladies.
Oh, yeah.
And nice older men. To yes. act as aisles and ushers and essentially bouncers. Because, mm-hmm. you know, even the most obnoxious drunk
is not going to punch grandma.
Is not going to punch grandma. It's like, young man, could you please just step down from there? Yes, ma'am. And there's an awesome matriarchal power to yeah. being the wise old woman.
Yeah. And I don't mean, not sexist.
No, that's sexist. That is wired into us as a species. You know, yeah. that is a good thing. Respecting mm-hmm. the elders of your tribe because they have grown old and wise and know things and experience things and they have wisdom to pass along is a wonderful thing. And it's deep in the subconscious.
It is.
And it can be a very powerful weapon.
So there you go.
Love you, baby.
Hey, happy Easter, happy Passover, happy spring, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.